It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Welcome to The Game Podcast, your home for expert football punditry. Finally, we have some Premier League action to analyse. With me to discuss an eventful first weekend are Paddy Barkley, Tony Cascarino, and from lovely downtown Barnes, it's Matt Dickinson. We'll be focusing on Newcastle's bruising clash with Arsenal and Manchester United's defence of the crown. Plus, on the eve of the Champions League qualifiers, we'll be discussing some big movers and shakers on the continent, some of whom may surprise you. So stay with us for the next 35, 40 minutes or so. All right, well, I think we're going to start at St. James Park this week. But before we get into discussing the world's third most famous tweeter, I want to ask something. I want to throw it to you, Paddy. Yeah. Can Arsenal be competitive without Nasri, Cesc, and Wilshere?
Probably not. I mean, the first two, yes. I mean, they're going to have to be. But to be without all three... smacked of carelessness. It's going to be difficult. It would be difficult for any team in the world without the three most creative players. And I think the sooner they get round to rebuilding around Wilshere and someone else, the better, because obviously the other two have gone for good.
Dicko, the reason I started with this, and before we, stop talking about football and start talking about the insanity, is the fact that in a game like this, Newcastle went out there, they were compact, and I thought, this will follow a certain script whereby, Arsenal dominate possession and pass the ball around and create chances, and Newcastle will hang in there. But instead, I certainly got the impression that it didn't follow that script, and that basically it was a boring, badly played game for most of the 90 minutes.
It wasn't a great game, and clearly Ramsey and Song weren't particularly on their game. To be honest, in the circumstances and the sort of supposed crisis of confidence around Arsenal, I didn't think it was necessarily the worst start. I mean, considering they're going to get lose Jovinho for a few games of suspension and Song as well, so it's hardly a good day at the office. But in some ways, they didn't lose this game, and if they can get through the Udinese game tomorrow night with some kind of positivity, then I almost think they're just going to have to sort of try and move on as fast as possible, avoiding disasters basically for the next two or three weeks. That seems to be the name of the game at Arsenal at the moment. It's just avoiding disasters that will allow the fans to get even more hysterical and almost bring down the season before it's even started. Yeah.
Cass, you mentioned Alex Song there, so let's get straight into it. I'm assuming nobody's going to argue that he should not have been sent off, right?
Yeah.
Can you explain, this kind of stuff happens, but can you explain, all right, you're on the pitch, you get fouled, you don't like Joey Barton, whatever. What do you get out of doing stuff like that? Out of the stamp, the thing calculated to hurt? Are you sending a message? It just doesn't seem like you're trying to wind him up.
Well, sometimes, I've been there myself. Sometimes players do go out on the football field with a premeditated intention of doing something daft. You know, and if they know they're up against Joey Barton and they know he's going to make a few rash challenges and make it difficult, they might have it in their head that they're not going to lay down and just take it, and they can react. Sometimes it's heat of the moment.
What, did it look heat of the moment to you with Alex Song?
Yeah, it did, but I think he made a couple of tackles on Joey Barton prior to that. But, you know, he was trying to make a bit of an intent in the game and an impact. And footballers do daft things. I mean, look, we're talking about Song getting involved in making challenges and slapping people around the face like you know, Jovino did for the sending off. And it's very, very difficult because footballers do this on a regular basis. And some of them, and as we well know, because Joey Barton's been the guy that's done off the cuff stuff for so long, that he doesn't disappoint us.
I think it's probably not that relevant whether Gervinho dived or not to really go and discuss what happened afterwards with Joey Barton and Walton. But just to get this out of the way, I thought the Gervinho incident was a classic incident where the attacking player knows the defender's leg is there, he lets himself fall into it, and a striker will generally tell you that, oh, well, there's contact, it's a penalty, and a defender will generally tell you, no, he ran into me. Mm. Am I wrong here, Cass?
No, unfortunately, in the modern game, and I sort of touched on it a bit this morning, one of my points is that there are players that are hell-bent on trying to deceive everybody. And I said it before, the game is riddled with cheating and taking advantage. It's one of the only sports where you get patted on the back if you cheat. And I watched the Stoke-Chelsea game.
Okay, well,
no, I'm not going to go off on
that. Frank, you're not going to criticise Frank Lampard,
no,
are you?
No, loads of players.
We learned from that, yeah?
Loads of players were looking to get penalties. And like that incident, it's so common in the modern game. And I wondered if we'd gone as far, what I saw last year. I thought, could it get worse this year? The evidence of the first weekend of the programme was quite clearly, yes, players were desperately trying to get penalties because they're awarded so easily. And players are brilliant at conning referees and you know, getting the defender to just outstretch a leg. And the moment they see that leg, they're going for it. They're going for that outstretched leg. You know, and defenders must be absolutely scared to death about leaving legs a little bit, you know, just randomly foot wider than it should be.
Maybe be a little less uncoordinated and stay on your feet. And then as a defender,
Gab,
it won't happen.
Gab, you can stay on your feet, and a forward who's good at it can make sure that you still get caught.
The defender in the Gervinho incident stayed on his feet.
Yeah. They're brilliant at it. I've seen so many players attempt, and they can do it when you're even standing there and not even attempting to make it.
So you guys are saying then that it's not a penalty and that Gervinho cheated?
No, yes. I didn't think it was a penalty.
I didn't think it was a penalty, and I certainly wouldn't have. Cass, you know, international centre forward, thought it was diving. Alan Shearer, international centre forward, said it was a penalty. You know, I don't think it was one of those where there was any excuse. I think the whole point was not the dive or otherwise. But what happened afterwards? That was a disgrace.
And we'll get to that. I just wanted to clear this up because I thought it was interesting. I mean, Gervinho stuff, because he clearly looks for the contact. Mm. Dick, I just wanted to get you on this penalty.
If I was the referee, I would have given a penalty, and I guess that's the sort of distinction. I mean, it's we can argue all day and about was he looking for a leg, but in real time,
isn't that the problem, Matt? Isn't that the exact problem? Is because we're getting players that are getting so good and so we actually can say one will go yes, you'll say no, I say yes, and that is a problem in itself.
Well, it is, but how are we going to get around that problem? It's hard, isn't it? The game played at speed with
To try and give Cass a wee bit of hope. I know he didn't see the Real Madrid Barcelona game last night, but two, what I thought were absolutely certain penalties, one for each side, were turned down. And in the second case, I think it was Sanchez or Pedro was brought down, and it was just one of those instances where the referee, I think, felt that an honest attempt to get the ball had been made, and therefore gave the defender the benefit of the doubt. And I guess that's what Cass is looking for. So you find out who the ref was of the Clásico last night, and give him a pat on the back, because that's the kind of reffing you're looking for.
So Walton can see Joey Barton making a beeline for Gervinho. And then he turns around and starts running up the pitch. Yeah. I don't know where he was going or what he was doing. But so he doesn't actually see Barton coming in, grabbing him, manhandling him. And he only catches the melee afterwards. Now, again, I don't want to pick on referees, but this is what you call a technical mistake. This is, to me, unless somebody can write in and clarify, maybe somebody from the Premier League, this to me is somebody, is a referee not following basic instructions. I can give a referee a pass if he doesn't see an incident or if he interprets it a certain way. But if he's looking in the wrong direction, then I kind of have a problem with it. Mm. That said, we get the so-called handbags. Gervinho reaches out, slaps Barton. Barton waits a couple beats and then throws himself mm-hmm. to the ground. Now, mm-hmm. Cass is laughing. Paddy, you're not. I guess you don't think it's funny.
No, I don't think it's funny at all. I mean, it's partly the timing. I mean, last Monday and Tuesday, our society, of which football, believe it or not, is a part, underwent a massive trauma. We then move on to the weekend, and surely to God, the players of the Premier League, who, let's face it, cannot be argued to be victims of urban deprivation since they live in the suburbs and are certainly not deprived, have no excuse for what was, in effect, however minor, a riot. Barton committed what, I went to my local pub and I said, if somebody had done what Barton had done to one of your customers, he said, it'd have been banned for life. We don't have it in here. And I think the FA should not only charge Barton with starting the whole thing, but should charge both teams with failing to control their players. And that way, the season could begin with at least a faint hope that football will be a help to society at its time of need rather than a hindrance.
Dicko, are you as much of an optimist as Paddy?
I'm not quite as as upset by the whole affair as Paddy's got to be said. I mean, it was ugly as hell, and the biggest conclusion I drew it from is just more to do with Barton deciding that he should he's the lawmaker, he's judge, jury, and everything else as to whether it was a dive or not. He should mete out his own little bit of justice. He's set himself up. I don't know if we all follow him on Twitter, but he's becoming increasingly sort of outspoken about the fate of newspapers. I see he said we'd all be out of jobs soon. He's becoming quite a little philosopher. Opinions on anything, everything. He reminds me a bit of the kid who sort of turns up in orange boots on the Sunday morning pitch. You'd better be good if you're going to set yourself up like that. And Barton's just not that good. He's throwing his weight around a bit thuggishly, and that was the cause of that little melee on Saturday.
Cass, we can't. I mean, I agree largely with what Dicko says. We can't make Barton pay, you know, on the pitch for his absurd behavior off the pitch, at least the non-criminal behavior, the one he supposedly reformed from. Mm. But I what gets me is, if you're Barton there, and maybe there is no thought process, maybe it's instinctive, you know that even if you successfully dive, and that looked really, really bad, to get Gervinho sent off, you're going to be crucified in the media. Referees are going to look at you. They're going to look at you in a different way. You're going to become a laughingstock, and I think largely he is with that sort of behavior. Does he not think that this is actually bad for Joey Barton to go and do that? Or does he not think at all? Or does that not go through your mind?
I think sometimes he does think. And like I touched on a bit earlier, he premeditates some of the stuff he comes out with. That doesn't work. And then sometimes it's instinctive, and that doesn't work either.
But surely that throwing himself to the ground like that was not instinctive, because he waits several beats before he does that.
Yeah, it was premeditated in the way he...
And then he tells, he says, he punched me, I mean, he's just a bald-faced liar, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a guy that is totally confused by himself, I should think. He's one of them guys you never know what you're going to get day in, day out. I can imagine him turning up at the training ground. What type of Joey is going to be there today? Mm. Is it going to be the irrational Joey that's going to completely be off the wall? Or is it going to be the, you know, philosopher Joey that comes out with these quotes that no one would probably associate with him and probably think, well, you know, has he read something today? And that's the new
There's
idea.
There's a website
of the day.
Called Bartlett's with Bartlett's familiar quotations. I think he has it bookmarked. It's a cut and paste job.
It's look, the bottom line is that I've said it before, Joey is a decent footballer. He's not a great footballer, he's a decent player. But the way he's carrying on, and Paddy touched on about all the incidents of last week and football, you know, you've got to remember that lots of players come from backgrounds where some would be hooligans, some would be louts, some would be guys on the street, you know, causing trouble. I can remember many conversations with players when a fight broke out on the terraces, they were watching the fight on the terraces while the game was going on. Mm. You know, there are players that come from type of backgrounds and bling-bling culture, and we see it a lot. We all know, we've met them, you know. I've played with some guys, and they just don't learn. I mean, Joey, for all what you said, Gab, is true. I don't think he's ever going to learn the way he conducts himself. I don't see him. He thinks himself as a role model. I think he seems as a role model for the guys on the terraces that are going to cause problems.
Right, he's certainly more of a role model, to be fair, than his half brother, who of course is currently serving 17 years in prison for his role in the racially motivated murder. I'm not supposed to say this, but nobody ever brings this up. But I mean, I don't. Obviously, you don't blame Joey Barton for it, but this is part of the environment where he grew up, right?
And that's what I touched on with Paddy, is that some of these guys do come from backgrounds, and of course we're not associating.
So what? The game has to be run.
I'm not excusing it.
The game
Paddy,
is run, has to be run by the principally by the Football Association, as it would be in an ideal world. On the basis of respectable, traditional, generally accepted values that are accepted across all religions, all ages of decent society. And it's no good, you know, analysing about what background people came from. The rules must be laid down by football and rigorously interpreted. We have learned over the last week where we've gone wrong in society as a whole. That's difficult. That's very complex to put right. In football, it should never have gone wrong. It's easy. We can do it tomorrow. And it should have been done today, this very morning, by the FA. They should have made a clear statement that anything remotely looking like a riot, anything that hints at violence, at violence outside the context of a football match, of course, you can have an overzealous tackle. That's football. That will be treated with zero tolerance. So don't come talking to me about backgrounds and God knows what. We know that. We know that half of them, you know, during hooliganism, half of the players would have been hooliganism if they would have been hooligans if they hadn't been players. It's not an excuse. They've got the chance not only to get out of it themselves, but they've got the chance to prevent others from terrorizing decent society.
I'm not excusing it. I'm not saying what they did is right or wrong. I'm saying that some of these guys come from these backgrounds.
I just think we should stop.
They are going to do things, but they are going to do things like that. That is what they do.
And they will continue to do things until society comes down on them like a ton of bricks. That's what I'm saying.
I might add, Cass says, you know, this is what they do. They do things like that. A lot of, you should also be pointing out, many people come from the exact same backgrounds
and do not behave that way.
Yeah. Okay, but yeah. Dicko, sorry, did you want to jump in with something before?
The thing is, this is not the worst. I mean, I sort of take Paddy's point that, you know, first weekend of the season, you know, is the time to lay down the marker. But equally, you know, and this, it was not a pretty scene, but I suspect we're going to see, you know, on the scale of it, we're going to see many worse before it's out.
We are, unfortunately, because we didn't smash this.
But I don't think finding Newcastle and Arsenal 50 grand each, and that's on the draconian day, isn't going to make much difference to that.
I think basically, if a fine and a suspended 1 point penalty would make sure there were no more riots in the rest of the season. You are quite right to predict that there will be more. Of course there will, as long as authority retreats, and we saw it on the streets all last week. As long as authority retreats, evil will step in and move forward. It's as simple as that.
Well, looking forward for Arsenal, huge Champions League qualifier against Udinese, a somewhat tricky side, potentially. Paddy, can you just frame up what's at stake over these two legs?
You touched on it earlier, Gab. You know, damage, and Dicko did. In fact, we all did. Damage limitation, basically, to get through this week. The number one requirement is to keep a clean sheet. I think we might see the most cautious home performance from Arsenal for a while. Keep a clean sheet because Arsenal should be able to score in Udine. I mean, I think that... it's going to be. Although it's only a qualifying match, it's absolutely vital to Arsenal's season. And I don't know if Wilshere's going to be there, but I think I don't know what they can inject, but he's got to play in this game because he's the cutting edge of the team. We saw it at Newcastle. I think that they should have been out of sight by half time. They weren't. They can't afford that against Udinese.
Newcastle fans, I actually wanted to talk more about Newcastle because I thought you guys looked more solid than many of us expected. Hopefully we'll be able to get to that in the next couple of weeks and you'll still be solid. Down we go from Newcastle to the Hawthorns, West Brom and Manchester United. I thought there was a bit of a seesaw for United. They started well. They looked really sharp. They take the lead. Then Vidic and Ferdinand get hurt. West Brom equalized. De Gea screw up. And then Ashley Young scores a winner. Dicko, how important is it, given that United generally start slowly, how important is it that they got the 3 points, given the injuries that they've sustained?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Moderately important. I mean, don't think we'd have been too, or they'd have been, wildly perturbed if they'd drawn it. But yeah, no, I mean, it was a positive start to them. The great thing is that Young, as you say, is sort of fitting in like a Man U player, and he's not even sort of Dwight York almost, the way he's fitted in, as if I love this shirt, I love this scene, I'm going to relish it. Rooney, I think, is primed for a colossally good season, assuming that scandal doesn't get in the way, or metatarsals. I really hope that he can be back to the player of two seasons ago. And centre halves, you know, I mean, now we know why young Jones joined Man United. He was very close, very tempted with Arsenal, but he was sort of reassured that he would get game time at United. And as Ferdinand hobbled off soon after Vidic, you know, there was the evidence for him. He is going to play a lot this season, which is good news for him. Probably good news for England too. So, you know, a lot of positives, with the one obvious exception being the lad in goal, who, I mean, yeah, the physicality. He's entitled to be slightly put out by the physicality and being barged around. But I mean, the shot stopping, there's no excuse for that goal.
Yeah, and we'll get to De Gea in a minute. Cassie, just want to ask you about Vidic and Ferdinand. I mean, obviously, you weren't a centre half, but you played against them. As they get older, as they get more niggly injuries, is a centre half perhaps somewhat more affected than a striker might be?
A lot of centre halves have back problems. I mean, and obviously Rio has had quite a number. It's been well documented over the last year or so. And the trouble is, with back problems, as we all know, that your hamstrings, your calves suffer, and if you're not spot on, and they show the signs of, you know, played a lot of football, a lot of hard games. Vidic is a no-nonsense type of centre-half. Like John Terry, he had back problems. He had to deal with lots of niggling injuries as well, because they put their, you know, their body on the line a lot in that position. They attack every ball. So it's, you know, it's a very, very damaging physically to you as a player. And I can't see Rio playing much more than last year. Okay, it's easy in hindsight after the West Brom game, but he's had 2 years, really, 2-3 years of lots and lots of indifferent problems. And I just think that maybe Lady Time has caught up with him as a player. Was playing from a very, very young age. Played a lot of football from 17 to where he is now. And is it a coincidence that he's missing more than he's playing over the last few years?
The key component of Ferguson's teams has always been the triangle. Even at Aberdeen, you know, Leighton, McLeish, Miller, Schmeichel, Pallister, Bruce, you know, you can always talk about that triangle there, that basis. And at the moment, he hasn't got that, because the goalie's like a jelly and the centre backs are trying to get to know each other. So get in there. I would say if I was QPR playing Manchester United now, I'd go at them.
Fly. You guys are saying, all right, the goalie's like a jelly. It's a direct quote from Paddy there. We'll make a point about the air. I mean, you're talking about the joint second most expensive goalkeeper in history. I think no matter how good he is, you know, it's likely that they severely overpaid for him when you look at the fact that he's 20 years old, you look at his body of work. However, one thing that struck me over the weekend is, you know, he obviously made a mistake, a pretty bad one. It's a second straight week he's made it. What gets me is, I think there's two fallacies here. One is people say, like, well, he's got to get used to the early burly of the Premier League and all those high balls. They had nothing to do with the mistakes he made.
There was footwork. He didn't use his feet. Well, that's why he let in a goal with Dzeko, and that's why he let in the goal against Long.
I disagree with you, Gab. That the mistakes were one thing, but there was also many situations, probably two or three in the game, where the ball's been put in a certain area, bodies are around him, and he isn't physically capable of dealing with it. Mm. Now, that's apart from the mistakes.
He isn't physically capable.
No, he didn't look like it.
That's a big accusation.
Well,
I mean,
he came off second best every time.
Yeah.
So, he, you know, you have a stature goalkeeper. They come and collect. They take people with them out the way, and they come and get it. And your defence is totally assured by what your keeper's doing.
Do you know what he is? He's Aurelio Gomez without the shot stopping. I mean, I can't see what he's got.
You've just killed him there.
I mean, that is what he is. I mean, it's unfair to, because the boy's 20. But how on earth he could have, Ferguson and all these millions of gold, what is the Tony Coton, is he still there?
No, they have a different...
All right, whoever. How on earth, he's had Alan Hodgkinson over the years, you know.
Yeah.
How on earth they could have watched this boy week in, week out, and then signed him for the first team? I just don't know.
He can only be judged in what's going to happen in the next few weeks and months, because, you know, everybody suffers, Gab. Everybody will suffer if you're not doing as well as you know you can, and other people around you expect, you know, you to perform to a certain level. If you don't, it does, you know, your back four will raise eyebrows. You know, whoever plays at the heart of the defence will be looking at each other and thinking, don't trust him to come and get this off if it's hanging here. I'm going to have to go after it. I'm going to have to attack it. And that happens.
There is also, I mean, it's always a risk, and Ferguson should have known this, presumably did, that it's a risk signing a goalkeeper from Spain. Okay, Reina's done all right, but what's the flaw in Reina's makeup, the six-yard box? Because in Spain, you're not allowed to touch a goalkeeper in the six-yard box. Every referee observes that. And, of course, I must say, I'm looking forward to Man United Stoke. When is it?
All right, that's brutal there, Paddy. Oh, one last thing just to wrap this up. I'm sorry. Chris, the producer, is looking at me funny, and he's got the disappointing thing. Chris, it's not my fault. We have to talk about West Brom as well. There are Baggies fans out there. You're shaking your head, just like the Spurs fan that you are. Paddy, I got to ask you about West Brom and your boy Roy Hodgson.
Terrific.
I looked at the numbers in the game and statistics lie, but they had 14 shots on goal. Well, United's 9.
Cass has just told you why. Because they, in fact, somebody took a shot from 40 yards.
What's the outlook with Roy Hodgson?
Because, well, I mean, they'd obviously... They were targeting De Gea. Oh, mid-table, certainly. I mean, they were 11th last season. They will be the most consistent of the relatively poor clubs because they have a team shape. They keep to it. Every player knows what he has to do. And by the way, the spirit was good. I mean, with 15 minutes to go in that game, they were bombarding De Gea, and you thought there's only going to be one winner here. Well, just shows how much I know. Ashley Young has that fantastic skill that Cass never quite mastered of being able to bounce the ball into the net off two players.
There you go.
I bounced a few players.
Yeah, you bounced the players in the net.
All right, I have a very simple question here for my panel, and you can all cheat by reading ahead so you'll know the answer here, but I'll chuck it to you, Dicko. What do Malaga, Paris Saint-Germain, and Manchester City have in common?
They all pay vast sums of money to footballers, fueled by Middle East oil and gas.
Correct. Bing, 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 bing. For those who don't know, Malaga have their own Qatari sheikh. He's a wealthy one, since they all are. Paris Saint-Germain are owned by, I believe it's a Qatari sovereign fund that has 70% of the club. And they've spent very big this summer. You know, Malaga getting people like Toulalan, like Fran Nistelrooy, like Santi Cazorla for, I think, in excess of 20 million. Paris Saint-Germain, of course, Javier Pastore, Kevin Gamero, Matuidi. A lot of City, who Momo Sissoko, and of course City, as they say, needs no introduction. Dick, I want to ask you, it's interesting, we're in an age of financial fair play, so presumably these things will even them out a little bit, but is it a sign of health that these investors from the Gulf are putting their money into European leagues? And does it mean much that, you know, instead of coming to the Premier League, where everybody wants to be because it's the best in the world, you know, the most recent ones opted for Malaga and Paris Saint-Germain?
Well, Paris Saint-Germain, I guess, you know, there's the sense of the great football cliche of sleeping giant. And I mean, there's a vast constituency there in terms of sort of potential fan base. I mean, ultimately, anything that Qatar do, I can't possibly understand. I mean, we could go World Cup, we could go paying a supposed foundation paying Barcelona 25 million a year, and the only charity in the world that needs to advertise itself. Why they are doing all this, you know, to get the name of Qatar out there. There must be some paper somewhere in the Qatari office that says this is a good idea to throw all this money at sport, but don't ask me to explain it to justify it. And as I'm sure Paddy will have particularly strong feelings about, it's driving inflation in football. I mean, Paris, I think the record transfer previous to this was 20 million tops, and they've just paid, was it 37 million for Pastore, is it? I mean, it's, you know, we're not just talking in small little leaps, we're talking, you know, changing the face of the finance. And that, while that brings money into football, most of that money drains straight into the pockets of the players. So, there are big, wide ramifications for this.
Paddy?
Well, I agree with all of that. I think that the only thing that doesn't alarm me, the only thing that I cling to, is that there is the inflation at the moment, which is rampant.
Sorry, this is one of those things where people then accuse me of being a bully and stuff, and because I'm in front of the microphone. Fine. But I apologize. You guys talk about rampant inflation. Spending is down across Europe. What are you talking about? You're talking about wage inflation? Is that what you're talking about? Because on terms of transfer fees, if it wasn't for these people, it would be way down. It would be down like 60 or 70%. Uh-huh. Even with them, it's still down year on year, and it's down from the highs of 2008 and 2009.
Yes.
So there is no transfer fee
inflation. I think if you were to ask Sir Alex Ferguson, he would describe the inflation situation as rampant. And of course, he's partly responsible for it because of Wayne Rooney's wages. But as a consequence of that, Wesley Sneijder is out of even Manchester United's price range. But I do think that the inflation, such as it is, will decrease. I think at the moment people are tooling up for financial fair play. I think it's interesting that the Arabs seem to have the idea, perhaps inspired by the Etihad deal at Manchester City, that they can circumvent financial fair play. But regardless of that, I think that there will be increasing investment in football in the lead up to financial fair play, because of course, if financial fair play works, it will be a very, very profitable industry.
That's exactly my point here, and it's easy to generalize about the Gulf and Qataris, but Cass, the guy who owns Malaga, he's a rich guy from Qatar. He's nothing to do with the government, although I'm sure he's related. But he's got a plan in place. He's saying, like the other big clubs outside of Barcelona and Real Madrid, they're all struggling. He's going to build a 60,000 seat stadium in Malaga. He's going to put money in. He's convinced the catchment area is there, and he's convinced that now is a good time that he thinks Malaga can compete with the big two in Spain. And I judge it's probably a good thing. Paris Saint-Germain, that's a sovereign fund. They own 70% of the club. They will be subject not just to financial fair plays, but also to the French regulatory system, the DNCG, which is in fact a lot tougher than financial fair play. Mm. These don't strike me as rich man playthings situations. Rather, people rightly or wrongly thinking they can invest in the game. And shouldn't we be kind of grateful that these people are putting some money in when everybody else seems to be skint?
Well, you're probably asking the wrong person, because I always think that I love money coming into football. And if it's via, you know, certain, as long as it's legal and it's legit money, I have no real big issue. And Paris Saint-Germain were a very big club. They came really... they became a really big club in the 80s and early 90s. When I first went to France, they had some fantastic players like George Weah, you know, Rai, who was a big centre-forward, Brazilian, yeah, top player, you know, some great players. Were
David Ginola?
Yeah, David Ginola was there as well, yeah, you know, and these were great players, and they were spending big. And for the last probably decade, they haven't done that. They've been playing second fiddle. French football's played second fiddle. Yeah. So the introduction of more money into French football, for me, is a good thing. Strasbourg, I think they went bust last week, didn't they?
Yep.
You know, a club that has I played in
Arsene Wenger's old
yeah,
club,
yeah, a fantastic club. It was renowned to be a well-run club.
So, in that terms, you arguing that it's not a bad thing that these people are coming in. Anybody disagree with him? Isn't
I don't see how anything could be bad with money coming in.
Well,
as
let's
long
ask.
It's legit.
Well, that's let's ask the inflation hawks, Dickinson and Barclay.
Mm. Well, I don't think it can be.
It would be. I mean, if they're building a lovely new stadium in Malaga, then that's a great use of money. I don't think it's a problem with money coming in at full stop. It's just the rather depressing conclusion that all it does tend to do is drive up in some insane player salaries.
Matt, since I've been playing football, I've never known wages to go down. Right? And look, when I first started in the 80s, players who played in the 70s said to us, never earned like this in the 80s. Never. And by the 90s, they were saying
the
80s.
All I'm saying is that there are all sorts of ways of using money to put in, and how often, you know, for once in a lifetime, most of it went into ticket prices.
Yeah.
Being frozen or being decreased. All I'm saying is that they're, you know, they're sort of celebrating money coming to the game. You know, if it attracts great and skillful players to your local club or your local league, then that's something to celebrate. Yes. But generally, and if you can afford the tickets, then great. But generally, that money just gets pumped straight to an agent, straight to a footballer.
What we must hope is that financial fair play encourages long termism. I'm sure that that's Platini's intention. And if Malaga are to build a new stadium, are to build an academy, if Paris Saint-Germain are to do similar things, and I think there is some evidence that Manchester City are thinking long term.
They have to.
They
have to.
Exactly, because they now have to, so that the rather crass sort of overspending that we saw I'm thinking of Blackburn Rovers, but that's not a good description of what Jack Walker did. I mean, I think we all approved of that. That sort of thing, I hope it will be something of the past, and that people will grow football clubs in an organic sort of way by increasing the stadiums, which it's been shown more or less everywhere, increases the crowd. People prefer a comfortable new stadium. And by building the academies, which is, of course, the best way now under financial fair play to discover, and indeed the equivalent regulations that the leagues have. You can have Ferguson's twigged this. Nobody's mentioned this, that Ferguson's got the biggest squad in the world, because homegrown players, you can have as many as you like.
I just love the thought of more competitive teams, you know, involved in every championship. I think the Champions League has been pretty much a dead rubber, the group phases, you know, where all the best teams are going through quite comfortably. And I love more teams challenging, like Man City, and if it's Malaga in Spain and PSG in France, great. Better for the game.
Well, there you go. Gentlemen of the Gulf, we like the colour of your money. All right, how about some quick hits? I know Tony's all excited. Alex McLeish was accused of being defensive at Birmingham, but in Villa's scoreless draw with Fulham, he played Heskey and Egbon Lahore and Bent up front, plus Nzogbia in midfield. Cass, he's not really a bus parker, is he? Yeah. And how well will Big Ek do this season?
Well, they still didn't look like scoring. Apart from Bent, you know, they have lost Stuart Downing and Ashley Young, which is a big difference, and certainly having Egbon Lahore and Heskey. So I think they'll be at best mid table, but I think they're very, very reliant on Darren Bent. He's going to have to get probably 15 goals for Villa to have a half-decent season.
I wouldn't bet against him. Sebastian Larsson moved for nothing in the summer and scored an absolute peach of a goal as Sunderland grabbed a point at Liverpool. Paddy, how good is this guy? Is he Sunderland's best summer signing?
Certainly looks so at the moment. I mean, that was, as you say, a peach of a... There's nothing better than those controlled volleys. But... I mean, in football, of course. There are better things out there in the world. But, I think Larsson's a very good player and getting better and better as his career goes on. One that got away from Arsenal, lest we forget.
The best things in life are free, like Sebastian Larsson. Speaking of Liverpool, they played well in the first half and then ran out of steam in the second. Dicko, what's missing apart from the man they call Stevie G?
Well, this is a new season. This is the real test of Doug Leach now. It's his team, his signings. He's got to build. He's got to build some slickness, and he's got to get Andy Carroll fit, very, very fit. I'm still troubled by Andy Carroll, to be honest, and I'm going to be watching him very closely.
Anyway, Gab, one for you. And I was thinking about this while really enjoying last night's Spanish Super Cup first leg on the telly. Thought it was absolutely terrific English style, in a way, game. Anyway, Jose Mourinho said that the gap between Real and Barcelona had been closed this summer. Did you see any evidence of that last night?
In some ways, yes, because Real Madrid went out there and I thought they were outstanding in the first half. Very unlucky to go down 2-1 down. But the flip side is you wonder psychologically if this is going to affect them a little bit, because they're playing a Barcelona side who started the match without Xavi, without Pique, without Busquets, and you know, with this bizarre Abidal Mascherano partnership at the back and Keita. And the fact of the matter is they drew 2-2 at home, which is not the greatest of results. Thank you for choosing to share your day with us. Remember, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mark Conti. Patty, you're at?
P. Barclay Times.
There you go. Cass? You have an account, but you don't tweet. That's okay. We like you anyway.
No tweeting.
And of course, our web chats. Mine's on Tuesdays, and Patty's is on Mondays. Till next week. Bye-bye.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.